This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. In this episode, our guests are Christine Maxey, VP of RevOps, and Hendrik Lee, Chief Product Officer from Lean Data. Welcome on our pod.
Thanks.
Thank you. It's great to be here. We're super excited to join you today.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you both on and hear your different perspectives. But let's jump right in. Give us the elevator pitch for Lean Data.
Yeah, so Lean Data is the market-leading revenue operations platform. In a nutshell, we make your CRM and sales and marketing technologies work better for you and your revenue teams. At Lean Data, it's all about harmonizing people, process, and technology. And the way we approach this is through our agile scheduling and workflow automation products that we've tailored designed for B2B revenue teams. And essentially for us, it's about enabling any combination of companies' revenue or go-to-market processes. I myself come from a software background, and the approach that we and I have taken to Lean Data and to revenue teams is providing revenue teams the ability to be agile, to test, adapt, and leverage technology in a way that works for their revenue teams and their business processes, and about enabling their teams and not being beholden to software or technology.
That is one of the slickest elevator pitches we've heard, or most put together one. So
good job.
I liked it quite a bit. Yeah, nice job. Starting out strong. I'd love to know a little bit about the story of Lean Data. How did the company get started? How old is it? All those fun facts.
I'll take this one. So I've been here since basically at the beginning. So we're about, if I can do my math properly, I think let's call it 12 years into our journey. And this is actually Evan, our CEO co-founder. You know, the founding story here is he's actually a product guy by trade. And he ran into some of the go-to-market challenges we saw today when he was first trying to launch a product in a previous career in life. And what he ended up finding was working with the marketing, operations, sales teams, he felt like he spent way more energy trying to actually get the product out to market than he and his teams had spent building it. And so for him, a lot of it was just around the lack of alignment with the marketing and sales technologies, the messiness of the data, the difficulty just running a marketing campaign. And this is back when, Marketo was kind of becoming a thing. And for him, this was such a big problem. He then, from a vision perspective, with Kelvin, our CTO co-founder, started Lean Data as a way to help solve the challenges of alignment for go-to-market and revenue teams.
I think a lot of companies are still in that place. That's why we started this whole company of like, how do we help these teams work together and utilize tools that will really help them do it? And I'm curious, Christine, why did you join Lean Data and how long have you been there?
Yeah, so my background is I've been in RevOps before it was a thing when we were just working off of data and spreadsheets. So I've had the benefit of seeing it grow from nothing to foundational tech, to so much tech, to consolidation of tech, to what tech don't I know I'm missing that I must have tomorrow. I've also worked at large companies. I was fortunate enough to start my career a long time ago at Sun Microsystems back in the day, and that started the trajectory of my career in tech. So I've worked at larger organizations that are already at scale. I've worked at startups that are trying to scale, and in between when it can't be as agile, but need to scale still pretty quickly. So that's a little history about me. I've also had the benefit of building and leading pre-sales engineering teams and customer success, but I always come back to RevOps because I love it. I love making people successful. And that's kind of how I started at Lean Data. I was an early customer, saw the product, and it was like, this, no one's doing this. It's the trifecta. It's a great product, a market fit, and a good team. And I came on board in 2016. I've had multiple roles at the organization, and I just can't break away. I just love the product, and we have an affinity for our customers. And that's one of the reasons I joined. Lean Data was kind of what I call customer curious and really obsessed with customer happiness. And you can see it in the way our customers are loyal to us. There's something pretty special about that. And so that's what brought me here and one of the big things that keeps me here.
I like that term, customer curious. I hear customer obsessed a lot, and I think that's too much of a term sometimes. It leads to being able to say, like, we can just ask our customers to do this from a research and product insight perspective. Customer curious is a better term to say, like, we really are curious about what our customers need to solve and what they're looking to do. Also, your RevOps is a thankless job, so I'm proud of you for continuing to go back to it.
Well, I don't mind. If other people are successful, they don't have to thank me, because I just, a lot of the characteristics of people in ops is like service to others and really trying to make other people successful. And it flows downstream, that success, really.
Yeah, I want to be on the front lines of that success. Yeah, you and Demetrius can talk
we'll
about that.
You.
So you, I mean, 12 years, you're relatively mature at this point. Where are you in terms of current financing stage? Are you looking to raise money? Are you, you know, I'm assuming you're profitable and able to fund a lot yourself, but what does that look like?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do want to say, speaking of thankless jobs, before we answer that question, I do want to say Christine is the best operations partner I could ask for. So we do believe in dog fooding our products, and Christine always says yes. She's always one, her and her team, trying out all of our products, everything we have. So I think from that perspective too, it's great having Christine and her ops team that's just naturally very curious about different way of doing things as well. In terms of our financing stage, we are currently profitable, so very fortunate to be in a position where we control our own destiny. Today, we've raised approximately $45 million through fantastic venture partners in Sapphire, Tenaya, Shasta, Felicius, to name a few. And today, given we are, you know, profitable and cash flow positive, not looking to raise at this time.
A nice place
Absolutely.
To be right now.
Great story. It's a great story. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So do we want to shift over
to
the
demo?
Yeah,
let's do that. What is the use case you want to share with us today? And yeah, what's the problem we're trying to solve?
How long do I get? I want to show them all.
Let's pick one.
Okay, well, I think the focus will be speed to lead, focusing on high prioritization qualification and not leaving anyone behind.
Sounds great.
On the customer journey, we're going to start off with interest and form fills. Most customers now, most prospects are doing a lot of research beforehand and reaching out when they're ready. So to meet them in their journey, I love our new scheduling automation from a web form. So when someone submits a web form, can we give them a calendar and allow them to schedule with the appropriate person right away? Now, my forms have standards, which means not everyone gets a calendar. If you're a competitor, if you did not give me your corporate email domain, you got to talk to an SDR. But if you gave me that information and I think you are a viable, qualified lead, we'll go ahead and figure out which account you match to, whether it's, we have some demo accounts in the system, customer, open opportunity, prospect. And these result in different outcomes. Will you get the CSM calendar, 30-minute check-in? Will you go right to the opportunity owner and have a meeting directly with the person you're already engaged with? Or are you a prospect? Do we need a 15-minute discovery call with the SDR to set you up for success on that demo that we're going to get you scheduled with? So as you can see here, when you are deciding who this goes to, it could go to the matched account owner, the CSM over here, it's the SDR. Maybe you use account teams or you have a mapping of some sort. You want to add additional people and maybe even create an event in Salesforce to track those. So I was actually pleasantly surprised when we rolled this out. I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. I'm not going to lie, but I'm going to do it. 50% of the time that a calendar was presented, it went right to a meeting. I was so surprised, but what if they don't schedule a meeting? What if they didn't get the calendar or they abandoned the form? They sat on it too long. They got called into another meeting. They forgot. This doesn't mean that the journey stops here. This just gives you the best viable option first. And if you don't get that, we'll go ahead and we'll pick you up in our person routing. Now, this can be contact or lead. I'm just going to show lead because I don't know. That's what I built.
The graphs that you see here, this is when I mentioned earlier about the workflow automation. So this is what we call Flow Builder. This is our canvas where you, as you know, a revenue operations partner to AM sales team, your different revenue teams, you will build out your orchestration over here. So in this case, with Bookit scheduling, it's typically in partnership with demand gen or marketing. You may work with your CSMs, or if you have an AM team, on upsell and the upsell growth. And so this is the core that you're looking at around the workflow automation. Right. And then Christine's showing you the various nodes you have here. You have a full menu on the right. That's where you access all the different integrations and options. And just for scale, Christine put together some examples that are a little more digestible, but on average, customers have, each of these are nodes, on average 200 plus nodes, with some customers in the thousands, depending on the complexity of their go-to-market motion, product lines, geographies.
How much the requests they get from the field. If you say yes, the bigger your graph gets. Yeah, I was reviewing this with the leader on my team who manages all of our graphs. And as we were cleaning them up to make sure they were a little more easy to digest and not so specific to our organization, she's like, I'm going to go back and do this for all of our graphs. These look so pretty. Yeah, the world is your oyster here. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because you can really do anything. And it's a bad thing because you have to rein in the field to do the things that present the most value to the organization, right? And I do a lot of things on the back end for just me that no one knows about. Tracking SLAs, updating fields to keep data governance, timestamping things because, I'm a geek and I like reports and I like timestamping. So as Hendrik said, the trigger isn't just on a lead or person being created or updated. We can look at campaign membership. That's a big one for us. New activities, intent, movement, job movement. But today I'm just going to focus on that demo request. Let's say that demo request came through. They filled out the form, but they didn't get a calendar or they didn't complete the calendar. We still don't want to lose that. It doesn't just go away. We're going to put it through the demo request flow. And again, I really want to know if the person coming in matches an account today and where they are on that journey with us as a business partner. If they do not match, we'll round robin to the inbound team. We're going to send an alert, and this is one of my new favorite things. It is not just sending an alert, it's sending an interactive alert. So when they get the alert in Slack, it's going to ask them if they want to do something. In this case, I'm asking them, do you want to qualify, move this as a qualified lead, or disqualify it right away, send it back to marketing? So if it's disqualified, it's going to go back to marketing. And if it's qualified, it's going to create an account, opportunity, and convert that lead automatically. We don't want to lose these demo requests. We want to see what happened as soon as they're qualified. So I can do that. I have Slack up here, right from Slack. Michael from EMC just submitted a demo request, a little homage to one of my former employees here, or former employers. And it says, it assigned it to me and I have 10 minutes. What am I going to do? I'm going to update that status. I'm going to go ahead and qualify that. So while that's working in the back end, action complete, check, check. Everyone's happy. My boss can follow along and make sure I'm doing my job.
And so what this does here is with the interactive notifications, we have an increasing philosophy here to make sure we are enabling lean data to work where your teams work out of. So this will then push data back into the CRM, into the systems that you want via lean data. And from there, you can increase compliance and make sure that you're not forcing teams to naturally always go outside of their workflow to help keep the process moving along.
Their natural habitat.
Always want to keep salespeople in their natural habitat.
Yeah, and they could do this, from Slack on their phone. They can still operate in Salesforce, just wherever they happen to be. At night, I see some demos come through for cleaning services and they want to write for us. I could just disqualify those right away and reset the round robin so the next person gets the next qualified lead. So that's pretty important to us, equitable distribution and access to quality leads. That's one of the things that we really focus on for our field. But what if it matches an account? So this is like a pure inbound, net new, love it. We're creating new opportunities, but often the demo requests come in when we're already working an account, marketing's working it, the sales is reaching out, and then finally they've investigated enough and they're ready. They want to talk. So if it does match a prospect account, we'll route it to the account owner, send them an alert. In my real org, I set a 10-minute timer, and if they don't respond in 10 minutes, I send their manager an alert. But not to be mean, I'm not punitive. I'm not going to take it away. I'm just trying to say, like, maybe Bob's at the dentist and he couldn't respond. And this is about creating a buying experience, a standard for our prospects that when they engage with us, we promise to do the thing we say we're going to do, which is respond to you very quickly, answer all the questions you have, and meet you where you're at. So it's really important to us that once we set that buying journey and what it looks like, that we do have and create that experience. And on the customer side, we actually, you know, we have a mix here of sometimes it's the CSM, sometimes it's the account manager, depending where they're at. I simplified this, but the point really is that it can go to anyone on the matched account. It could go to the, we have SDR, we have, oh, I'm in your dev org, so we don't have SDR. But it can go to someone, oops, sorry about that. It can go to the matched account owner, someone on the account teams or an owner mapping. Whatever you do, we basically can make that happen.
That is helping to solve a lot of problems. I think sometimes just these orphans, they are not picked on time. And I know you guys, you've been solving for that for a long time as well. Often the teams just are confused. They just don't know who should really take an action, right? And if nobody's taking action, you should take an action. It's something definitely that you're solving. But I see there's another value here. I like how you connected the CRM with the intelligent workflow. I like this term being used in description of these diagrams. And collaboration. I think the workflows have a tendency to be left behind somewhere on the back end of the system and not having enough visibility across the organization. But I think once you bring it on Slack, you're giving the ability to everyone to see, you know, what's going on and who is the owner and whether people are really taking action, right? So, you know, it's one thing that your boss will see this, but there's the rest of the team.
Yes.
And now the teams will see, okay, so, you know, Johnny has this, right? Like, oh, Maggie, oh, she picked that, right? So that's awesome that you bring that transparency without this mystery or magic that is happening somewhere in the system and everybody's assuming that it's going to be done. Well, it's not.
Yeah, there's another part of our product called the audit logs. Christina was actually one of the first, when she was in her customer life, people to really take advantage. It's a pretty nuanced part of the product, but it is actually one of the most powerful pieces because we talked about alignment. That is one of the areas where our customers over time have told us this actually drives the ultimate transparency. So basically what that does is it gives you full transparency into what happened and why. It should just execute into perpetuity. But the reality is organizations, go-to-market teams, processes, they all change over time. And so what the audit logs allowed customers to do is they said, we could quickly figure out what was happening. And instead of sitting there trying to diagnose what was happening, who did what, they were able to quickly then get to the root of the problem to fix it. So that was actually a pretty core part of the initial journey of Lean Data, was just that level of transparency, which we've now taken into all of our products.
And not only transparency to see exactly what happened, but marketing is in the demo request channel as well. And it helps them to see what type of volume is coming in and quality real time. So it's across the function too, not just what went where, but what's coming in and how can we improve that. Marketing loves seeing that upticks after events. It just gives everyone a sense of momentum and excitement. And I do want to be clear though, when you send a Slack alert, there's a lot of noise today. So you need to be super clear on what do I need to know, what do I need to do, and who is the action. So if you're going to copy multiple people, you really have to say, FYI, or Hendrick, you must do this, and within this many minutes. Setting those guardrails in the notification through clarity and call to actions really will drive the outcomes you're looking for and help people be successful.
It is important that you have to ingrain in the culture of the company prioritization around what is a priority and what is not. And, you know, we all have been somewhere in the operations or around the operations, and the operations is usually having this tendency to receive a lot of requests, and nobody really considers that there is multiple requests coming from other sources and other people.
Yes.
And then you're left by yourself with a bunch of stuff and you have to make it pretty, right? I mean, it's almost mission impossible. It's only a question, you know, who's going to lose, who's going to win. But I think when you have in the organization a clear definitions, you know, what is the priority, and then you execute on this with use of your tool, I think that helps a lot to really prove that, you know, Dimitris was not sitting by himself and trying to, you know, drink coffee, but he was actually going through these items and ensuring that his team is getting these items done. That's kind of how I see this. And I think your solution can definitely help with that.
Yeah. This is the audit log that Hendrik was talking about. When I clicked on that qualified from Slack, it showed that I completed an action. It was qualified, and then it went ahead and it created the account opportunity and converted it. So here's the new contact from that lead, and here's the opportunity. So many things that you can do. Let's see, we were here.
Going back to Christine's, you know, customer curious, love that term as well. We first came up with the autologs because when we hit it, our number one contact was, what happened to this? And we hit it for the longest time because we figured no one would really care at that point. Once you set the rules, it should just kind of execute according to the rules. But I think the initial false assumption there was everything is in this perfect state that doesn't change. And in fact, everything is changing all the time, whether it's your go-to-market, the data, your teams. That was one of the first areas where, as we figured out why customers wanted all this information, even though we thought it was just minutia, we realized the importance of having this level of detail as an ops team.
And the standards within Salesforce are pretty low, so the audit capabilities are a little tricky. So everything we do is just like icing.
I feel like it's often where you come back from an event or something happened. We did some big marketing push and then we're like, where do all those leads go? And you're digging for them and finding them somewhere. And so to have that, the background audit is very helpful to identify that quickly instead of waiting on someone who can go into Salesforce and figure it out. And I was going to comment on this off the bat. Like, this is a RevOps tool that I could use, right? Like, this isn't overwhelmingly challenging to figure out how to lay these pieces out. And I think that is a big benefit because a lot of the CRMs are a little more complicated to figure out how do you make an automation in them, which is awesome. One question I do have is, do you have templates for where to start? Because it feels like it could be overwhelming on like, where do we begin?
We do have templates and snippets coming out. So templates are a complete graph to get you started. And with our most common use cases from our most successful customers.
Trade on IO.
On each one of the graphs anything, for the standard autos, objects within Salesforce.
And where we differentiate between these two is just the
out.
Level of breadth and depth we built.
So
the graphs are, motions, whether it's there's a series of tiles that
round
that
robin
flash
earlier in
Christine's demo that basically allows you to have entire flows. Where
we
you
have
just get up and running.
Process. They will route.
We don't recommend you
millions
go to this
of leads.
You'll want to customize.
Millions of
we get up and running,
especially instantly.
And then there are different full motions those represent. And then there are also snippets where, if you have certain technologies you integrate with, those are the templates. And then if there are certain areas, you go, hey, I have a speed to lead motion. I want to integrate with SalesLoft. I want to process a G2 signal. There are little snippets that you can then insert into your graph, which will then say, hey, here are the, I don't know, I want to run this play based off this signal. You can then insert those and then customize it to your specific rules or thresholds. That's a great question. That actually has been an area that a lot of our new customers really from a template perspective to get up and running. And then existing customers, as they look at all the different possibilities, they want to really help themselves understand, hey, we're trying to accomplish like an SLA. How do I do that? And so that's really where snippets comes in.
Yeah, or if they onboard a new vendor and they're like, okay, let's look into setting up the integration there. That's awesome. Yep.
Anything to get your customers to value more quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'll show one more.
Yep. Okay. Go for it.
Continuing on that customer journey, the one thing we don't want to lose is those interactions as they relate to opportunity cycles. So you'll hear buying groups, buying committees, opportunities, contact roles. For me, I use an engagement score that is populated by one of our other vendors. It could be anything on the contact record. For me, it's an engagement score. As soon as that hits 80, I look to see if there's an open opportunity. This is relating the contact to all open opportunities at that account, picking the best one. As long as they're not already a contact role on the opportunity, we're going to add them as a contact role. And you can have a set of rules here based on title, engagement score, whatever you'd like. And then it's automatic. This will help with attribution. This will help with user gems, which are customers who change jobs. That was another thing that I was going to talk about, but I think we're running out of time. But it just shows that as that person moves throughout their life cycle at that organization, how do they interact with you? What is their influence and relationship with us? We build partnerships. We don't just have customers, right? Because customer sounds like more of a one-way street. It's a partnership. So we build these relationships that we want to go on and make people successful here at their next organization, whether that's through purchasing lean data and using it to its fullest extent, becoming certified, being a member of our community, our operations community, OpStars. It's really important that we're building a community. So this is just one of those things that talks about, you know, how do we make sure we understand the relationship that person has with us throughout the life cycle of that opportunity and account?
That's very cool. I feel like a lot of the tools that you may compete with take on a portion of this. So they help with the upfront lead routing or scoring or whatever that may be. But you really have a solution that can help with the lifetime of the customer and rounding out that data for account manager, CS person, whoever it may be.
All right. Shall we move to the go-to-market? Who are you selling to? I mean, we have a natural suspect, but I'm curious about the ICP and what are the companies you're targeting?
In general, for us, we target B2B companies that are essentially either at scale or scaling. The kind of, you call it, you know, 100,000 foot ICP is, if you're in a room, you're able to talk to your entire selling team by turning your chair around. Probably not something where you want to use, you know, something like lean data, but where you are at scale, you start having specialized team members, a more complex go-to-market motion, rules of engagement. That's where, for us, you all want to look at a solution like lean data. I like your Christina kind of give her perspective from an ops point of view.
I mean, I use it all the time. I would say about half of what I use it for is for me and my team personally to track, automate data governance, move data, relate data. So for me, I don't think I could live without it. I'm a little bit reliant on it now. And unfortunately, with Salesforce making some changes to flows and it being a little more complicated, I've moved most of my process builders over here because I can control them more. I'm seeing a lot of challenges with moving to some of the standard functionality and understanding processing time. So I like that I can control it. So for me, from an operations perspective, I always want it. I think that it grows alongside with your team. It's kind of annoying that I can't say no because they know I can do it. So if they ask me something, I'm like, oh, I can do it, but should we do it? So that is my challenge often. That it's an interesting place to be in a revenue operations role where the company sells to my persona because it's awesome. I get early access. I get influence on product. I get access to best practices and what everyone is doing. I get to hear those things. On the flip side, it's hard to say no because they know I can do and undo things pretty quickly and I don't have a good excuse. So for me, I think I want it day one, but I think it does make sense. It's hard to rip and replace. So I know that some other tools will do something similar, even Salesforce itself. But it is one of my least favorite things to do as an operations professional is to rip and replace. Rip is easy if I don't have to replace it. But if I have to replace it, there's never enough time and enough energy and enough bandwidth to rip and replace. So I like the fact that this is a scalable solution. That matters to me, especially now as we're growing. I don't have time.
So are you saying that a lot of your automations that would historically have lived in Salesforce, now you have built in lean data? And are you seeing, you know, I think there's obviously pressure on operations teams and sales teams and costs a lot of money to maintain Salesforce. So I'm curious if you're seeing some of your, you know, newer customers who have gone through a rip and replace because the fee or the cost of lean data would actually be less than maintaining Salesforce.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. I think coming from some other solutions that are not as enterprise ready, the transition is not maybe too bad because we kind of do more. So we can do a lot of that without customization. The ideal is to use all the standard features and functions. Customizations lead to maybe growth challenges. So if you're working with a vendor and you're doing a lot of custom stuff, it's not in their roadmap. Your custom stuff is always outside of that and their growth strategy. So it's ideal that you pick a solution where their standard functionality meets the majority of your business needs.
Yeah, for us, a lot of customers, you know, everyone is doing something from a go-to-market revenue operations perspective. And so for us, it's not about you're doing nothing and we're walking into a net new situation. You are always doing something, you know, manually processing, or you have some type of other solution you've put in place. And so a lot of the kind of the philosophy with which we approach or our customers kind of come to us for is being able to do it at scale, having the agility, the transparency, and the flexibility. We do have a lot of, you know, if you are a DIY, you've built it, it lives somewhere in between a homegrown system, Apex code in Salesforce, maybe a little bit of marketing automation. And then maybe there's Jonathan sitting at the third desk from the left who processes like this one channel worth of leads for some reason, because he's been doing that for the past year and a half and just never got out of that motion. And so again, a lot of what we really want to do is drive transparency into that process, and not just, you know, purely from an automation perspective, but also just having a source of truth to figure out what is happening, where, how, and then why.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mentioned competitors before. I feel like it's a, I'm also curious about partnerships. I'm wondering if there's like a delicate line between the two and kind of how that unfolds. I feel like Salesforce, obviously you partner with them and you integrate with them. There's probably some competition to some degree with them, or at least user functionality. But yeah, who do you consider your competitors in the space?
Yeah, I would say there probably are three categories. One, you have the ones that try to really, I would say, go head to head from a, we want to try to build something that's head to head. The second piece are what I would consider more general automation tools. And then the third would be the homegrown DIY. I'm going to, you know, hire a team of developers to try to figure this out. In the first camp is kind of your ringleads, or formerly ringlead, ZoomInfo. I think OS is kind of the moniker now. You have companies like OpenPrize, where they do try to have a more purpose-built solution that goes head-to-head with us. We did actually have one other competitor, Lead4. We purchased them, I think it was a couple of years ago. But those are kind of one category. And then the next are, I was considering like your, we do route anything through us. But for them, they really want to go deep on that go-to-market. So, okay, I'm doing a buying group motion here. I'm launching in EMEA, and here are the products that we want to sell and the way we want to structure the teams and go-to-market. So for us, being purposely built for revenue go-to-market teams and go-to-market and revenue orchestration is really what's key. And then I think I mentioned earlier with the Apex coding, that just becomes really expensive and difficult to scale. And the main challenge when customers come to us, they say it is completely opaque.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know who built what, where it lives. I mean, that's kind of the, with the last piece, the what we call homegrown or DIY solution.
Yeah, I guess that's a better, you're not competing with Salesforce, you're competing with the homegrown solutions that have been built on a Salesforce.
Yeah, it's like one of our guests once said, you know, my biggest competitor is no change.
Yep.
And I think that is true, because you know, you're always fighting these workarounds that, you know, they last quite long, but when they go down, it's disaster, right? Like, because it's just so many layers of things that were put together over the years. There's just people just don't know what anymore what it is.
Being a product guy, you know, we work with a ton of great revenue operations folks, even IT, in larger companies where IT, you know, control Salesforce, we work with IT teams. And a lot of these folks are just incredibly sharp. They're incredibly creative. And coming as a product guy, it's like, hey, I can kind of figure this out. I can build it. And at some point, it's where do you reach that tipping point of, you know, the ROI, the cost, and then if something were to go wrong, or, you know, the proverbial if XYZ person wasn't here tomorrow, like what happens to the house of cards, you know, we've built?
Yeah.
That's really kind of balancing that fine line between we've invested and built all this to, hey, we're now ready to graduate to a proper solution.
That's a good segue to the product itself. And I must applaud the team and the founders, starting with very obvious and prevalent problem to solve, which is a silo thinking between the SDRs and, you know, sales versus marketing, and this blame game, right? Because everyone is just having their own thing, and now suddenly, you know, everybody's pulling their own reports. You know, they just simply don't tie, and that's embarrassing, right?
Yes.
For both sides. It's so, but at the same time, it was the company was enabling with the product the third group, which was on the rise, which is the RevOps, right? And it's acting almost like a judge with a very tactical tools that you can customize right and left. And that's what you, Hendrik, you were saying, that every company is different and every company is doing their own way. And you essentially enable that, right? So product will be different, the different selling motion, there will be a you know, different selling cycle. There will be plenty of things that you do differently. And you can capture this at the tactical level in a very, very easy way. And over the years, you're building, like you said, the breadth of the abilities that you can enable these teams, you know, and the competitors cannot catch up. But as always in the business, there's a time when you have advantage, and that advantage is getting smaller and smaller because your competitors, they figure it out. So what's the next thing for you guys? Like, where are you going? Is it more of the ABM type of solution you're going to go? More in kind of market research, you know, collecting the more market signals. I mean, I can see these two working hand in hand with what you have. It's just probably a question of where there's a bigger opportunity for you.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Let me address this maybe in a couple parts. It's interesting you mentioned the catch up. So 12 years ago, lead to account matching was not really as much of a thing. And over time, you know, it actually took a little longer than we had thought. It's kind of become commoditized. And so even if you have an incrementally better lead to account matching, that alone is definitely not enough. And so a large part of this is making sure we build kind of the breadth of capabilities. Because as we work with RevOps professionals, they and teams, they really need that level of breadth and depth. So I'll give you an example. So we went from lead to account matching to now essentially matching anything. It's now called our match context. So whether it's lead to opportunity, course duplicates are in there, any object to account, case matching. A lot of this becomes the context because that then provides the ability for not just the flows to know when a new lead comes in or a new record, who is this, what is this? It provides that context. So that's kind of one piece, which is we do need to continue to push on the current areas we have. The other one, you may have noticed today when Christine demoed, it's very Salesforce focused. We're actually now in beta with our Dynamics product. So we are seeing a huge rise in Dynamics. A big part of this is we saw customers who have left Salesforce say, hey, we're going to go use Dynamics. We actually also have a beta we're about to run within HubSpot as well. And so really that CRM expansion, because as part of orchestration, it's important for us to be able to support all those different CRMs. So that's really from an infrastructure level. When you mentioned signals, we do actually see ourselves today as very partner-friendly. So the companies that Christine mentioned, we do think there are best-in-breed companies out there that are really great at capturing the signals. We want to continue partnering with those providers. I would say the second piece, though, is as we look at AI, and AI's got to be in every, you know, product conversation, I think the other portion for us is from an AI perspective, you mentioned templates, snippets, these are all great. It's still someone building, looking at how can we have AI better inform prescriptive selling? How can we have it better recommend prescriptive go-to-market motions? Because we have well over 1,000 customers who have each deployed dozens of go-to-market flows, changes, motions, each of them themselves. And how do we take this? And obviously, with a lens of data privacy, you can have all this information to understand what are the best types of recommendations you should be running as a company based on your profile? Mm-hmm. Who do you sell to? Where do you sell? What is your type of persona? And being able to recommend these. The other piece is, and this is maybe a little more back to the go-to-market motion, we're seeing a huge lead into buying groups as well. And so for us, we've been working with a lot of our customers to enable buying groups. And so that's also another area we will be diving even deeper into. And today we've been lucky to work with, you know, the likes of some of these earlier customers like Siemens, Palo Alto Networks, and even NVIDIA around their buying group motions. And so what we want to do is take this to the next three levels to really support the movement to buying groups. And as I talked about AI, using AI to help inform what should those buying groups look like, who should be a part of them. And when you have all these signals coming in, I think a lot of what the customers that we work with deal with is there's so much coming in. How do I make sense of all of it? And that really for us, I think, is a huge product direction, is to help customers better able to process all of these signals effectively.
That's really exciting.
It is exciting, especially when you put this AI umbrella to be more prescriptive, because that's what you're probably trying to do with all the data that will come in. And what really surprised me is that you said about the integration with the Microsoft Dynamics, but now I see why you want to do this, right? Because your tool is so much enterprise oriented, and Microsoft, of course, has the biggest market share in terms of corporate clients, right, in America and elsewhere. So I can see why you want to do it. Another question I have for you is what you see right now on the market, what your customers are telling you about the conversions. I'm hearing that, you know, more and more companies are struggling with selling cycle. The 24 seems to be worse version of 23, right? So I don't know how bad this can be in tech business. First of all, I wanted to understand like what the customers are telling you and how you see your solution can help them solve that.
Like everything else in life, there's not a necessarily one-size-fits-all umbrella, but I would say in general, especially those selling heavily into tech and the commercial segments, our customers are telling us, hey, there's basically a hangover from 2023. 24 is going to become this hockey stick. Has not proven to be the case as we talk with our customers. The other piece, though, is we are seeing things with our customers stabilize. So for us, we can see usage of our product. Our customers also, you know, come and talk to us. We do see things are not, I would say, getting worse as a whole. That said, as you look across different industries, there is a differentiation depending on who you sell into. So yes, if you're tech heavy, commercial segment heavy, definitely a lot of pressure. If you are primarily an SDR focused organization, it's not to say no one has success, but in general, we have definitely seen a lot of pressure with that type of pure outbound motion. But it does differ across different segments, industries, and types of customers. From a lean data perspective, you know, I think this kind of goes along with my philosophy around product development, which is you can't keep doing the same thing as if you're a customer and something isn't working. So a lot of what, you know, we really encourage customers to do is, you know, think about what traditionally has worked. If it no longer works, then one of the options is you can continue to try to do the same thing and hope things change. Or two, you can take, especially if something like lean data, run tests, run different motions. For us, you know, we're expanding into EMEA. We're seeing unintentional growth in EMEA where we're now hiring a much larger dedicated team in EMEA because we're seeing a lot of pickup there. Plug, if anyone listens to this and they're in EMEA looking for a revenue role, you know, reach out. But a lot of this is really taking a look at what is and is not working. And if something's not working, leaning into either what is working or trying new things. And the beauty is you don't have to pivot everyone. You don't have to pivot the entire company. You can carve out ways to test that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think as you were talking a little bit before about what you're doing on the AI side, you're kind of getting into like the product marketing space of like, how should we do this? How should we go to market? What's our ICP? And right now, I think companies spend a lot of cycles trying to figure that out. They might just be sitting right in front of them in the data of like, okay, why don't we go and try this thing? And right now going to market is challenging. Demetrius and I talk about this all the time. My inbox is flooded with emails. I am not reading them. And you have to cut through the noise somehow. So utilizing the data of like, okay, let's try these, you know, three different things and see which one works best. And then once we identify that, we can lean in here and let you iterate. But I things that used to work or not work anymore. And so companies are going to need to evolve there.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there's anything in your go-to-market that you see as cutting through the clutter. You mentioned doing well in EMEA. Do you think you're utilizing different tactics there that seem to be helping?
Christy, maybe you can talk to that piece from a go-to-market perspective.
Yeah, I think it's having people there and having localized group of people that work together. And it's very motivating. It's like a small office we have out there with three people who are grinding every day, getting back into the old school hustle. And we are investing in events there and different things like that. So we also have a marketing contractor there that we're investing. It's not completely organic, but it is natural extension of what we've done today. I will say something else we're seeing is early adopters are generally on the West Coast and they're tech. We're seeing a lot of success in picking up the phone and calling on companies that are not necessarily tech forward. I mean, they might say they're a software company, but they're really in financial services or something like that. Those people still pick up the phone, and it's still worth making the phone call and practicing and having a good pitch ready to tell them why now is the time to think about the value Lean Data can bring to their organization, how we can help them. So I will say phone calls in the non-tech space are really working. It's all more important we don't lose leads. But when I, a year ago, was like, wow, what am I going to do with Lean Data, the product, now that, you know, inbound has slowed down? I spoke about revenue protection programs that we put in place using Lean Data. I call it the four Ps because it was just the four places I focused on. And one was the product. Do I see anything unnatural happening in the product? We used to be like, overages, they're using too much. Let's call and sell more. Now we're like, wow, theirs has dipped. Did they have a layoff? Are they having a hard time? Did someone leave the company? Trying to meet them where they're at. Call them ahead of that renewal. Say, hey, we see things have slowed down. How can we help? What can we do to meet you where you're at? We want to keep you as a customer. We understand what's going on. That's been really successful, just being empathetic to our customers and having that signal from the product to tell us. That's one P. The other is one of the big reasons that we have challenges at renewal is our person has left. So really understanding job movement, people movement at our customers has been key. Hey, Bob left. Let's not wait until renewal to figure out who Bob's replacement is. People intent. So at the customer, are our customers researching our competitors? Are they researching our products? Are they on our help desk? Should we reach out and say, hey, what are you looking at? How can I help? Right? So building relationships, meeting them where they're at. And the last thing is we have a lot of partnerships. We have a lot of integrations. But if it's in Salesforce, we can help you with it. So did you just buy Sixth Sense and you need to understand how to get the entire value from that product or User Gems or Champify or any of these other products where we can help one of your other products do well? And so we had to shift our mindset a little to say, hey, these might not be revenue generating, but they're definitely revenue protection, brand loyalty building, and really just empathetic to see what's going on out there and how can we keep these customers, how can we help them? So that's how we shifted a bit internally and used our product to do so.
I think that's like a great advice for anyone that's struggling with retention of paying attention to those things. And I'm a partnerships person. So the snippets thing, I was like, ooh, this is a great way to get integration adoption, like hand feed it to people. But I think it's a really good point in any of this go-to-market tech space. You know, the CRM is like the hub and you can pass data in and out of that and you can help people make sure that they're seeing effective results with their ABM so that they are getting leads coming in and thinking about it holistically and getting your account management teams to think that way is really important, especially today when it's not as easy to retain customers. So I really like that.
Everything that you mentioned about the four P's is a fundamental to any customer success efforts, right? I think you're right. You pay attention to the relationship, ensure that you're always on top of the org chart. You ensure that, you know, people continue getting value out of it and you have an expansion on the integration because the more integrations is very likely harder to rip and replace, the earlier point.
Yeah.
So definitely more data to consume. And then to Hendrik's point, if you apply the AI in your future releases, yeah, you can be way more prescriptive. So it goes back to all these four points. I completely agree. I'm just curious about this scheduler that you showed us in the demo and this value journey element. So what was the inspiration behind this? Like, what was the trigger that you came up with this idea? I mean, there's always something. I'm just curious.
Yeah. So a lot of the revenue orchestration area, what we saw, at least from a trend perspective, is the scheduling area became a key part of revenue orchestration. And for a lot of customers, scheduling is not just web form. It's also, you have the ability to do smooth handoffs within your revenue teams. You have, you know, your scheduling capabilities across multiple platforms and channels. And so for us, just to be, you know, very kind of transparent here, unlike your form providers, there was not a natural way to integrate or partner with the folks who were out there and some of the solutions being used. And so for us, there were two aspects to this. One is we saw it as a core part of revenue orchestration. The second part was a lot of our customers, time and time again, they came back and said, hey, we're using some type of scheduling, but how can you integrate lean data routing with it? And so that's kind of how it started. So what we actually had wanted to do was take our automation and try to integrate it with some type of existing set of solutions out there, when that proved to essentially be far more difficult than saying, hey, why don't we build a solution off of our core? We have the automation, we have the workflow, essentially plug in the scheduling, of which we already had some of those backend integrations. That was really to help our customers. And for them, it was really about that customer experience that Christine talked about. So they really wanted to offer that as another part of the orchestration experience to their customers.
I mean, I'm connecting this with the four piece that Christine just mentioned, right? You would listen to your customer, you had a relationship. So that's a great example how all of that works together. Great job.
Thank you.
When I look at vendors that I'm going to purchase, I always try to figure out where they started as an organization. How did they build their foundation, not just from a product, from their product architecture, from their go-to-market? And because ours was all around data and relating data and orchestrating data, building on top made sense, right? We weren't a scheduling tool trying to route. We're a routing tool scheduling. And layering on top and having a modular solution has made us successful in that. And let me tell you, if you don't have a scheduling solution, your reps are doing something. They're doing something free and you might be losing the data. I was just looking. We booked 480 meetings in the last 30 days with a link, not just a form. Our reps creating their own links and sending them out. And, you know, I probably would have lost a lot of that data if I did not have a solution that's going to track it. If you're not giving them some way to do it, they're going to figure it out on their end.
You're getting all the flavors.
One other question. You've shared so many interesting things about where you think the market's heading. So I want to pick your brain just one more time. I think some of the stuff around like in person in EMEA and having a team there, we're seeing a trend of like back to events, back to in person, and that being really important, verticalizing your outreach. But I'm curious where you think any other trends of like where we're heading in go-to-market and go-to-market technology.
Yeah, I think a lot of waterfall technologies kind of. So if you think of Clay, and you don't have to pick one solution. There are solutions out there that are allowing you to pick, for Clay, for example, like pick the data that you need. And if you don't get it, go to the second source. And you don't get it, go to the second source. So leveraging some tools like that. I think when you said in-person, let's not forget in-person meetings. We used to do that all the time. And I got to say, there was something really energizing about that as a salesperson or supporting a salesperson, meeting face-to-face. So not just events. I love the idea of us getting face to face and being in someone's office and maybe grabbing lunch with them or meeting other people that happen to be in that day that come into the office or come into the meeting. So in person, I'm leery of mergers and acquisitions when it comes to tech, because one piece seems to suffer in the beginning while they're figuring out the back office and prioritization. So that's something I'm a little leery of, but a lot of co-opetition, you know, like we're going to work together, and really putting that customer first is working.
Yeah, I think there obviously will be mergers and acquisitions, which is great for those companies that get acquired. But I agree with you, like the going to the Clay side of things. There's companies doing a lot of pieces really well, but it's not going to solve every single problem you have. And so the tools that integrate will be the ones that win in that and are okay with having one or two products that might compete. But generally speaking, it makes sense to use them together. So as a partnerships person, I am so excited for more and more of that. And I am kicking my salespeople out the door to go meet people in person. I'm like, go, you have budget, get back out there. So I'm excited to see that happening more as well.
Yeah. And I think in general, maybe just to, you know, draft off of what Christine's saying, you know, I think a big trend will be we're seeing this explosion in signals, and it goes back to how do you help people, teams, you know, make sense of all of it? And I'm what I call maybe an AI realist. I'm in that. Tomorrow, AI is not going to take everyone's job. But I think what AI can do in the short term is really help directionally inform. And so as you take a look at all these signals coming in, I don't think tomorrow AI is going to find the one and best signal that'll solve every company's, you know, challenges. But what it can do, I think, is really start to separate true signal from noise. Because one thing I do think is important, and we are seeing more customers do this, is as you come out of the growth at all cost or growth at any cost and the idea that, you know, budgets are unlimited, it's really not about that one silver bullet that you as a company need to find. It's about how do we do things from a tactical perspective, multiple strategies, multiple go-to-market motions that make sense in various situations. I think we're seeing really a return to that place where people are trying different things, you're optimizing, kind of getting to brass tacks.
Yeah, and being flexible within that, right? And evolving as the industry and market evolves. Okay, well, you've mentioned a few companies that you're excited about or that you're working with. Anyone else you want to shout out in the go-to-market space that are doing cool things?
There is one, I will say. It's not typically one I think people mention. So Christine kind of talked about like User Gems, you know, Nectar's one for me. I love these, I would say, smaller companies that are really providing this signal to or noise to signal push. One that I'm actually really excited about is Microsoft. And I actually think because of the scale they're at and their proven ability to be agile, I actually think Satya and the team have over the call it last decade or so really transformed Microsoft into a company that's not just at scale, but because of their capabilities, I think they actually have a huge amount of potential in all different areas. Obviously, they have the OpenAI partnership, but even outside of that, with their Azure platform, with the inroads they're making across all their different technology areas, I think there's just a huge amount of, let's call it, potential and potential energy within Microsoft, especially in the B2B space. Like we all saw what they did with Teams, you know, just given their sheer breadth. But I think they're going to be a company that we should all, you know, watch out for.
Making a comeback.
Absolutely. They already did.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Christine, you have anyone you want to call out?
Yeah, just a few. And the thing I want to remind myself and others is always leave room for new tech, right? It's so hard. And look, people are buying. Last year, I said, I'm not buying anything. I bought a bunch of stuff. This year, I said, that's it. I'm not buying anything. I bought a bunch of stuff. People are buying. It might take a little longer. Be patient, but I do believe people are buying, and I love new tech and trying new things. So I'm always, you know, sitting on demos and stuff, but I'm excited about...
Christine is also good about cleaning up what doesn't work. So that's the flip side.
I love deleting things. Yes, it makes my heart happy.
If the technology isn't working, then she's great about working with the team to say, hey, let's try something different.
Yeah, that is true. Hyperbound, which is you can place calls and they'll have AI practice with your SDRs, and they are out of practice on calling. So I'm excited about that. I'm really liking Lavender, which is helping with draft emails. And first it starts like industry-wide, what is being opened and responded to the most? What are the trends they're seeing and giving you scoring and guidance around that? And then the more you send, the more they focus on what's working for your company as an organization. So I really like that. And we've had a really good success with GTM Buddy for our content management and LMS. And these are small companies, but they really are focused on customers and trying new things. And so I'm excited about those three.
I think learning management systems are an area that could use some innovation. So I'm always excited when I see those ones pop up. Wow. Yes. Did either of you prepare like the top three tips?
More for me, it's more of an approach and mindset.
Mine is a little different too, but I'm happy to go.
Okay, we can go for it. Both. Come on, guys.
Three lies I told myself when I started managing the team. And one was, I get to buy software. I don't. I get to evaluate software. And then there's always someone else above me who makes the final decision. And sometimes I don't even get to evaluate it. I'm just told to buy it. There are four reasons I think I buy. Someone told me, I want to try something new. I've had it before. I love it. And I really have a business problem that needs solved. But even though it should happen in this order, it sometimes happens in the other. So I don't buy software. I evaluate software and someone else makes the final call, which is super annoying. I said to one of my employees, I said, that's it. In 2 years, we're going to have the perfect tech stack. It's going to take us that long to churn all these contracts and buy all the stuff we love. It is not an endpoint. It is a journey. And I'm still on that journey. And I'm like 3 years in and we're still not to perfection. Because things are changing a lot in RevOps. History is not really repeating itself in the economy, the tech available, the go-to-market, where the AI, all the things available, it's not kind of coming full circle. It's just going like this all over the place. So that's been my journey, not a destination on my tech stack. And the last was, people kept talking about consolidating their tech stacks. We're not. We're optimizing. Sometimes that is consolidation, but it doesn't. Optimization doesn't have to be consolidation. And consolidation can get tricky when you're thinking, oh, this vendor is building this secondary product. Maybe I can use it. That's you managing one contract, one company. That's not always the best. It has worked. And people really thought this was going to be a thing. I think it's half the thing. You know, I looked across my tech stack and I was like, you guys are using something that's similar. Let's consolidate. But I didn't say, oh, you're forecasting and your territory management, let's consolidate. Like, it just didn't consolidate as I thought it would. But so I wasn't consolidating, I'm optimizing, and that's a forever journey as well. So those are the lies I told myself.
Yeah, I love that.
Good one.
Yeah, and for me, it's more of a philosophical approach. I think a few years ago, Meta, Facebook kind of took Agile a bit out of vogue with some of what they did. But I would actually say for my teams and what I would say for revenue teams and companies is don't be afraid to iterate, to try. I think oftentimes there's a fear of I've got to change and realign the entire company. But I would say just in general, if you think about which events should we try, what type of go-to-market motions do we think are going to work, what type of campaigns, I think the agile iterative approach is probably one that hasn't been as front and center lately. So kind of what I would recommend and what I really believe in, especially from even a product perspective, is it's really important to try, iterate. Not everything will succeed, but you'll find some gems in there. But if you don't try, you'll never find any of those.
It's okay to fail. Yes. It might happen sometimes, and that is perfectly okay. So
absolutely.
Cool. This was incredible. It was so fun to hear your wealth of knowledge and go to market. So thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
It was a ton of fun. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
Really.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.